State sports is what they do best. This is Between the Lions. Be part of the show and follow us on Twitter at BTW_PSU. Now, here's Brian Tripp, Jason Lord, and Matt Bortner.
Already week number four of Between the Lions. Seems like we just kicked this thing off. We appreciate everyone tuning in once again. Between the Lions, everything Penn State. We'll discuss here Penn State's win over Georgia State. Probably fly through that 56-0. Recap the non-conference schedule and then look ahead to the conference slate that begins Saturday night at a very difficult place for opponents.
Kinnick, it's Big Ten season. Let's go.
I like it, Jason. I'm ready for it as well.
Oh, I'm very ready for it. Conference play now set to begin. Begins in a very tough one. You talked about it. Kinnick Stadium is not an easy place to play, but I'm very ready for it.
Iowa, in fact, 9-3 at Kinnick Stadium under Kirk Ferentz in games that kick off after 6 p.m. Those three losses, Iowa State in 2002, Ohio State in 2006, and Penn State led by Matt McGloin and Bill O'Brien in 2012. Iowa has won four straight home night games. Two of those coming on game-ending field goals, and everyone remembers the win last year over Michigan that propelled Penn State eventually and helped propel Penn State into the Big Ten championship game. So Brian Tripp, Jason Lord, Matt Bortner, glad you're with us once again here, and we appreciate Forever Media for allowing us into their studios here as we record this episode. If you're listening on iTunes, please rate our podcast. We'd appreciate that, and you can chime in on Twitter at BTW_PS. So a 56-0, let's jump right into it. A 56-0 win over Georgia State on Saturday. Penn State up 35-0 at the half. Eight different players with a touchdown offensively. The defense pitches its second shutout of the season, and special teams very heavily involved once again. I think the number one takeaway for me from the first three games, and we'll get into takeaways from the first three games in total, though, the field position has been so good, it set the tone. And Penn State comes out on fire in another game, Jason, and they just take care of business very, very impressively.
Yeah, it really did. I thought the start was critical. They started well, led at halftime again, 35-0. So I thought really they did what they had to do on all sides of the ball, kept their guys, for the most part, healthy. Obviously, the Brown injury was an issue. But, yeah, really did what you had to do. You played a lot of people. You showed your depth. You got ahead early and played enough people, as I said. So I think really they took care of what they had to do, and now they're ready for conference play, as ready as they can be.
For the most part, the stars, you have a couple of injuries along the offensive line. Now Torrence Brown on the defensive line, his status unknown. He is listed as the starter on the Penn State depth chart, but you can't read into that. Matt, you had an injury update today while you were at the press conference with James Franklin.
Yeah, Franklin talked about what his sort of mood was after the game, and also that they don't really get into the injury talk. But I think that's sort of a sign to me that he's not going to play this week, because usually he gives you at least an indication that somebody might be able to play this week. He said he's not even going to get into it.
And he did do that with Cam Brown and Brandon Mann, who he expects to play this week, and we expect to play this week. But your thoughts on the game, Matt?
Well, yeah, I think there was two things you wanted to happen in the Georgia State game. It's take care of business right away, get off to that fast start, and that's exactly what they did. Trace went 6 of 6 for 59 yards on the first drive, flawless. The second thing is go injury-free, which didn't happen, and we'll get into it a little later, but Torrence Brown is a key cog on that defensive line, but that's your only real concern coming out of that game, which it could be big. But for the most part, I think you saw what you wanted to see.
What about the running game? Saquon Barkley, 10 carries, 47 yards. The longest carry he had, 33 yards. So you take that out of the picture, then you're looking at 9 carries for 14 yards for Barkley. Any concern about the running game, Jason?
There's some concern. I think they got to do a little bit better job. But the problem is going to be every game, teams are going to key to stop that. So you're going to see better precision through the air like we saw in that game on Saturday. You're going to see Barkley a lot of games be more effective through the air, which he was against Georgia State, which he's been much of this year. So I think it's a concern. I think you got to do a better job. I am impressed with what the backups did, especially Miles Sanders. I thought it played well. But the problem is, like I said, you're going to see every team coming in with the focus to stop that. So the yards are not always going to be there.
And even, I think, if you're thinking Heisman now, too, only 10 carries for 47 yards, no touchdowns.
Yeah.
Well, four receptions for 142 yards and a touchdown.
Anybody that's going to say that, though, isn't watching the game.
He's a guy, and now realistically, do I think it's going to happen? No, but he's the team's second leading receiver behind Mike Gesicki. And
I remember you saying that at the beginning of the year, that you thought he might be one of the leading receivers on this team.
He is on pace. And granted, it would be very difficult to keep this pace up. He's on pace for 1,000 rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards in a season, which obviously no one's ever done at Penn State before. And you don't see it in college football. If he does that, that gives you the Heisman Trophy, I would think. So if you're just thinking Heisman, it's a discussion we'll have throughout the year.
Well, and if he does that too, they're having a successful season. So that's comes in the Heisman territory as well.
Probably the most important thing is the season itself. You look at what the focus was going into the year, it was going to be for Penn State to be better than they were last year, and they were a Big Ten champion last year. So that was the focus to me. The Heisman is a great bonus. To me, the Heisman, this is a conversation for another day, too. It's become a PR award. I'm not sure it's given to the best player in college football anymore. So I think the main focus is if he's going to have a 1,000 season, like Matt said, that's a sign the team is being very successful. The team is using him very effectively, and Penn State has bigger things ahead.
Well, I want to get to that, and that's as this team comes out of the Georgia State game and moves into the conference slate. What impresses you most about this team and where you think the team is? And, Jason, you touched on it. This team has as much personality, character, and unity as I think you've seen, and we've talked about fast starts. Penn State, 42 first quarter points this year, 42 second quarter points this year. That's 84 first half points, the simple math, in three games. This team is focused, they're well-prepared, very well-disciplined, only 3.67 penalties per game. That's 10th in the FBS. I think when you just look at their overall mindset, approach, preparation, and James Franklin deserves a lot of credit for this. His staff deserves a lot of credit for this. And the players and leadership deserve a lot of credit with that. I think that's the thing that impresses me most about where they're going and the potential hurdles they may have down the road. They seem like a team that's well-equipped mentally, and obviously they have so much physical talent in all three phases of the game. I'm really impressed with that aspect coming out of the non-conference slate.
Yeah, James Franklin has pounded the approach into him that he takes in the one game per preparation. Go 1-0 this week, go 1-0 next week. That's what they do. They're focused on the opponent. They've done a great job in starting and really have done a great job in all three phases of the game. They're winning every battle right now, which has impressed me considerably, particularly defensively and special teams. I think you knew the offense was special. Defense and special teams, do they still have to grow? Yes, but I think overall they have played great.
You are listening to Between the Lions. You can tweet us at BTW_PSU. Coming up on this episode, Frank Bodani from the York Daily Record will join us as well, and we'll ask him that question. Where is Penn State after the non-conference slate? How do you evaluate them? And Matt, where do you feel like Penn State's at right now?
I think they're in a great position. Obviously, 3-0, and they've at times they dominated Pitt, but for the most part, they've dominated every team they've played. So I don't think, for me, we ran a little Twitter poll asking how people's opinion has changed since the non-conference has panned out. 17 votes, 29% said for the better, 6% said for the worse. I don't quite see that at all, or 65% no change, and I'd be with the popular vote here and saying no change. But I think that's a good thing for this team, is that there is no change in what the expectations were, because those expectations were already high. And to get on jump on your guys' comments about the focus, I think also with that focus is that we knew there was going to be more depth this year. We've seen it, but the thing that impresses me the most about the depth is the versatility of their depth. They have guys that aren't all playing the same roles, that they can bring guys in that do different things.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest advantage to the depth they have, is that there's a lot of guys with unique traits.
And I would argue that the expectations are higher now than in the beginning of the year. I think in the beginning of the year, yes, they are a contender for a Big Ten championship, but you're looking at Ohio State, Wisconsin, yeah. and Michigan.
Yeah. Almost That's a big in, part of it.
Almost in the same pack. But right now, I think Penn State, and not by much, and it's still very early, and Penn State has not really been tested yet, but because Ohio State has struggled at times, and Michigan's offense has certainly struggled, and they may have a question at quarterback, and Wisconsin plays in the West, they're kind of in their own little world out there. Penn State, I think, because they're inches, maybe even just centimeters ahead of Ohio State and Michigan, I think the expectation now is this is the true favorite to win the Big Ten and represent the Big Ten in the college football playoff.
Yes, I agree with you. I think they are right now the favorite in the Big Ten. The expectations have gone higher because of what Matt said. Ohio State loses. Suddenly that team that was the favorite in the beginning of the year is having the same problems they had last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their quarterback, JT Barrett, is still struggling at times. Young at key positions, something we saw Penn State 2 years ago at. Young at key positions, mm-hmm. you see what that does and how much it affects you. Yeah, Michigan needs a quarterback. I'm not sure they have one. Penn State, do they have weaknesses? Of course, everybody does, but they are strong at key positions. The other teams I'm not sure are, and that's why I think you have to give Penn State the nod right now as the team to beat in the Big Ten.
Matt, I'm curious as to what you feel Penn State's weaknesses are right now, because when we did a show 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe that's different than your answer that you're going to give.
I still think it's the offensive line. I think just because it's that position where it takes a lot to gel together all these guys at one point to be able to say, hey, these are my guys that I want every down. Mm-hmm. And sometimes championship-level teams never find that. And that's, I think, a part of this team that we'll be looking to see each and every week. And a lot of that, I think, will depend on the health of Brandon Mann and Andrew Nelson. Andrew Nelson had a couple penalties, holding, some false starts, but he hasn't played in a while. So I think you want to see those guys get a little bit more aggressive, but I think that's them needing to be able to gel and know exactly, well, I got to do this, this guy's got to do that, and sort of figure out how to piece all of them together.
But coming into the year, we said secondary, and that looks like something.
I don't think that's much of a question right now.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. So let's look at that offensive line. On Saturday against Georgia State, you saw a little bit different lineup than maybe you expected to see going into the night. But you're looking at now Bates, probably left tackle, and you saw Fries in that game as well, as they had to shuffle the guards. Fries got some action. Because Gonzalez had to jump over, and then Fry slid in at guard. But you're looking at going into this week, Bates, left tackle, Gonzalez, left guard, center, McGovern, right guard, Brandon Mann, right tackle, Andrew Nelson, and Jazz Wright. And I'll make a quick point on what you were saying about the penalties with Nelson. And that, to me, indicates a guy who doesn't have the confidence that he has, and maybe this is false in his own mind. Maybe it's a wrong narrative for him, but it shows me he doesn't have the confidence that I'm fast enough, I'm healthy enough to get off the line and make that play, or make that play without having to grab a hold of the guy. That may come, and maybe he does have that, so I want to read into it further, but that was
your line. Because he didn't play the whole game either. It's tough to get in that flow when you're being subbed back in and forth. So, yeah, I agree, though, that it's something that we'll have to see how that progresses.
So do you think that moving forward, if healthy, let's wipe the slate clean, say everyone's healthy, could be 2 weeks down the line. Bates at left tackle, Gonzalez left guard, McGovern center, Mann right guard, Nelson right tackle, or right. Is that the best offensive line for Penn State?
That's a good question. I think you probably still need to shuffle some things. And I'm still not entirely sold on Bates right now. I think that's the one weakness that I'm clearly seeing.
As a starter or at tackle?
At tackle. At tackle. He's getting beat at tackle. And look, when you change positions on the line, there are some guys, when healthy, can do it. Andrew Nelson, I think, can do it and do it well when he's healthy.
And James Franklin recruits guys who can play multiple positions. Yeah. They're versatile. They all have really, really good size. That way you can play guard, and then you can slide out to tackle because you need so much more size to play tackle.
Right. But I think that's the biggest concern for me is Bates. Other than that, I think the line, for the most part, is, I don't want to say set in stone, but it's played well enough that I think you keep it where it is. Right tackle, went healthy. I think Nelson is the starter. Mm-hmm. That's taking nothing away from Wright. I think he's played well. But, yeah, Bates is the concern for me at the other tackle position. I think he struggled at times, and that, to me, is a sign that maybe shuffled a little too much there.
See, I would move Bates back inside as well, put him at left guard, bounce Gonzalez back over to right guard, play him with Nelson. Then the experience that Bates then has as a guard can help McGovern. Maybe you get that inside push. That's the one area James Franklin said they're lacking as well, and bump Mann back out to left tackle.
That's what I was going to bring up. I think that's an interesting point because the way this offense runs is that you can maybe get away with having some of your smaller linemen on the outside at tackle and trying to get that push up the middle with the big road graders like Ryan Bates. We saw Chaz Wright play guard last year a little bit. I think that's maybe something to look into possibly because you sort of need some of those quicker guys to bounce those runs to the outside as well.
But I also think McSorley's had a pretty clean pocket for the most part this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to take the pass blocking into equation.
Yeah. Once again, this is...
This is all
nitpicking. This is going to be a developing thing all throughout the year. I don't know, though, ultimately, if we'll see that much change throughout the offensive line.
All right, so as far as what's been most impressive or concerns coming out of the non-conference slate, heading into the conference slate, let me just throw some things at you and see maybe what you guys have stat-wise or overall picture as well. For me, most impressive, Penn State struggled in the red zone last year to get touchdowns at times. They're 11 for 13 in scoring touchdowns, 12 for 13 overall in the red zone this season. I know who the opponents are, but that's still really good. I don't know how you stop this team in the red zone.
That RPO has been untouchable in the goal line.
Yeah, Gesicki is such a weapon down there, and we haven't even seen them really use Juwan Johnson in that equation as well. I mentioned already all the points scored in the first quarter and first half. They've improved on third down. Still not great, but they're up to 37%. That's an area they struggled in last year. They found a way, whether it be an explosive play in a third and long like we saw with Barkley on Saturday, one of the most spectacular touchdown receptions you'll see, just his ability to get past the defense that had an angle on him, or their ability to get in more manageable third
downs. The best
downs.
Defense to Saquon this year has been the sideline, either him on the sideline, not in the game, or him stepping on the sideline.
That's the only way I'd be able to stop him. two more. Plus seven on turnovers. They've found a way to create more turnovers. Mentioned the discipline and preparation at the top of the podcast, the penalties, them coming out and playing great, and obviously field position. I think with the exception leading into Georgia State, it was the exception of the kick return game. You saw Saquon start the game with a huge kick return and maybe answer some questions as to why he is back there. They've answered special teams look really good. So that's what's really impressed me the most. I know it's kind of a long list, but it can be a long list when the team's 3-0. And's only allowed one touchdown in the non-conference slate.
I think all those stats indicate to me that it's a good team that is now striving to become great, and they're on their way to doing it.
How about experience, too?
Experience is huge. Depth last year, all of those injuries last year, and all those players that got to see time, I think is helping this team. And you sensed it would. You're seeing it now. Yeah, that experience and depth is huge. But this is all stuff you talked about. They struggled last year. They've now worked on, clearly. They knew their weakness. That's a lot of credit to the coaching staff and a lot of credit to the players for knowing their weaknesses, working on them, and now executing them. I still think third down, they're better. They still got to be a little bit better maybe. And this is nitpick. I mean, you're a top five team. You got to be a little better. They're not a top five team. 37% is great. But I think it just, to me, is a sign that a team that was a good team that could have been a playoff team is now becoming great and making their way to a potential push to bigger things.
All right, how about concerns? I have Tyler Davis, 2 for 4 on field goals.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like the same guy. Wide receivers, of the 57 receptions, only 28 of them have gone to wide receivers, and interior push along the offensive line. Matt, concerns?
Well, I'll touch on Tyler Davis first. I don't know. It's a concern that he's missed those field goals. But he also hasn't had that many opportunities to kick. When you're sort of in those blowout games, maybe that your mind isn't always in the right place when it comes to kicking. He obviously has to get better, and he's capable of it because we saw it last year. So it's a concern, But my feeling is that it's going to get better.
Yeah, so do I. I don't think the red flag is up yet with him because of just how good he was last year and how clutch he was coming out of nowhere, really, a season ago.
If I'm not mistaken, he's hit a 50-plus yarder this season.
It was a long 40-plus, right? It was 40...
I know it was the longest of his career.
Yeah, and the concern for me, line run blocking, I think is the biggest concern for me. Wide receiver to a point, but I think I have enough confidence in them with their experience and also what they did on Saturday against Georgia State, getting in the end zone for the first time is usually that bubble burst that when that happens, suddenly you develop more confidence. I think I hope that I see that. I think now that you see Polk get in the end zone, now that you see Black Nugget in the end zone and get catches for the first time this year, too, I think now you maybe see that bubble burst and get more confidence. It's still a concern, but not as much as it was a week ago.
All right, we have some similar questions as we welcome in Frank Bodani from the York Daily Record and get his take on some of these early topics as we head into the matchup with Iowa Saturday night, 7:30 at Kinnick Stadium out in Iowa City. Lucky to be joined now by Frank Bodani from the York Daily Record here on Between the Lines. Brian Tripp, Jason Lord, and Matt Bortner with you. Frank, welcome to the podcast. Appreciate the time and always enjoy your work. So we're really, really looking forward to talking to you.
Thanks so very much. I really appreciate you thinking of me, having me on.
All right, Frank. So where do you feel like the team is through the three non-conference games? We'll start with that.
You know, I think they're developing. I know that that may sound kind of strange to say after everything they did the end of last year. But, you know, it is a new team, slightly different leadership. And I think, and maybe it's this part of it's the system. And maybe part of it is that, especially on defense, I mean, they're still working in a lot of young guys. I kind of don't know if we know the exact identity of this team yet. I really think they have a chance to improve as the year goes along, similar in a sense to last year. So Saturday at Iowa, you know, you get a much better vision, I think, of how they can respond to some situations where they're headed.
What's impressed you most about this team through the first three games?
I you know, special teams, I think overall, that was something such a glaring weakness during the sanctions. And to be honest, I mean, under Joe, certain parts of special teams were always very reliable. But it seems like Franklin this year has taken it up a notch, especially on kickoff coverage. They finally have, I think, who will be a pretty consistently good punt returner, a guy that can always break one at any time. And they just are relentless on the coverage teams. And that, I think, gets overlooked a lot. But to me, combine that with their punter, and I still think Tyler Davis is going to be really good. To me, that's a big improvement.
And heading out to Kinnick this weekend, Iowa City, that's always a tough place to play. But how much have you had a chance to sort of see Iowa at all, and what problems may they be able to bring to the Nittany Lions this weekend?
Well, I mean, they're going to have the emotion, the home fans on their side. I mean, that is the place is the stands and everything really close to the field. So Penn State sidelines is going to have Iowa's fans right in their ears for the first time this year. So that's a little bit of an advantage. But, you know, to me, Iowa is solid. I think they look similar this year to what they have in the past. I think first-year quarterback, but he's still pretty reliable, bigger kid, I think can throw the ball well. But, I mean, nothing out of the ordinary. Got a really good set of tailbacks, so on and so forth. But here's the deal. Can Iowa, especially on defense, deal with Penn State's versatility? And I think here is the week where you see potentially what Penn State's kind of made of, the problems they can cause, because it's not just Saquon Barkley. It's being able to know, well, when teams are loading up on him, you got all the downfield targets. And I mean, we kind of know that, but I think this week, really, you got a chance to see it more prolifically.
And how much was the wide receiver sort of, I wouldn't say step up, but they showed their ability to get into the end zone. How much more of a threat does that make Penn State already with McSorley and Barkley's ability to run and Barkley's ability to catch out of the backfield?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they really have it all covered. It's just making the right decisions on the right plays, right? And I think people have a lot of faith in Trace to do that. I thought he looked really uncomfortable for some reason against Pitt.
Yeah.
Not just that he overthrew guys. He just didn't look comfortable to me. Well, no matter who the competition was last week, to me, he looked more like his old self. And no more better than on that little crossbody flip of a pass to Barkley that he took for the touchdown. That's the kind of kid that I think can cause a team like Iowa all kinds of problems because they are sound, they are tough, they are strong. I'm not so sure defensively if they're a good matchup for Penn State if they have enough speed, if Penn State executes right. And Saeed Blacknell getting in the end zone, getting involved, I think.
Frank Bodani, Penn State beat writer, York Daily Record. I want to revisit, Frank, what you were talking about with the identity of the team. And I think most people assume we'll talk offense with this, but it doesn't have to be. What ultimately do you think that identity becomes for this team?
I think a ton of guys contributing. I mean, especially on defense. I mean, I think they take pride in being able to rotate 9 and 10 linemen, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think their defensive backfield is better than it's ever been under Franklin. Experienced talent combined with some depth. Linebackers should really be a strength. The one thing I'm interested to see, and I'm not going to hold it against these kids yet, is some bigger plays, some impact plays from their linebackers. All those guys have played before. Kind of a little bit, to me, a little invisible the first three games. So we'll see. I mean, they got quality there. I think better depth there. I think we are seeing some young kids, especially, you know, James talked about them today, that the defensive backs, Lamont Wade, Tariq Castro Field. These kids, he's getting kids in now that are good enough to play right away. Not that they have to, but that they can. And watching these kids grow up, I think they fuel each other. I mean, you have a lot of younger guys, especially on defense, that are just finding themselves, maybe don't know how good they can be yet. They're growing up together. I think they have enough of a core of a leadership. You know, I don't know. I'm interested to see. I mean, to me, it almost looks like the defensive backfield is really the backbone of this team defensively. Because to me, they have a lot of experience and leadership personality back there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's where the most personality comes in with Marcus Allen. Last thing from me, Frank, and Jason may have one more. How ultimately, and I think you're still seeing puzzle pieces being put in different spots, and if healthy, how ultimately do you think, it doesn't have to be this week, but down the road, the offensive line, how do you think that shakes out for Penn State?
I think that's the key to how dominating they can be is how they answer your question, because I expect them to be better. I expect them to be stronger up front and to be able to enforce their will on teams. And they haven't done that yet. There may be various reasons for that. But, you know, I'm expecting them to still take some big jumps during the season. I mean, if they could do what they did mixing around parts on the fly last year with the line, you got to think they can do better than what we've seen the first 3 weeks. And maybe part of that is getting the passing game going a little bit more and teams finally having to relent and say, well, we got to deal with this more than just Barkley. Part of it may be getting Brendan Mann and the lineup in there for more than a couple games. I mean, to me, that's the next step. That's the thing that will make them a playoff team, is if their offensive line can literally move people. They couldn't win the USC game at the end last year because their line wasn't good enough to do it. To me, that's the next step for them.
Yeah, they'll need to play well to beat Ohio State, Michigan, with what they have up front defensively. I think arguably those are the strengths of those two teams. That would probably be the key matchup. That's way down the road, though. Frank, really appreciate it. Great stuff, as always.
Very welcome.
All right, guys, we started to get into this with Frank. Iowa at night. Mentioned some of the numbers at the top of the podcast. 9-3 at Kinnick under Ferentz. In games that kick off after 6 p.m. their local time, this will be a 6:30, well, perhaps later after ESPN's finally ready with the ABC broadcast. This will be one of those late kickoffs. It's a very tough place to play. I think going into the game, that may be the thing that most people are most fearful about.
I think so. I think you're most fearful for two things. Yeah, it is the night game, and it's the way Penn State won last year. I think Iowa has that on their mind. But staying with the night game, I think when you have a coach that has been there for 19 years, 19 seasons, you develop consistency. And Kirk Ferentz has absolutely developed consistency into this Iowa team, no matter who you plug into what position. I think that helps in big games. Night games are obviously going to get the fans up. Those are going to be the big games. His consistency is what allows them to play as well as they do. I take nothing away from the players. They play the game, but I think when you have that coach that's been there and has been in almost every moment you can be in, that helps.
And the last time Penn State had championship on its mind, 2008, 2009.
Which technically ended in the – it wasn't a primetime game, but it ended in the lights.
I still feel the wind from that game.
Everyone remembers 2008 in Iowa City, Penn State. This is in November. Darryl Clark at quarterback. Iowa wins it 24-23 over number 3 Penn State. Penn State suffered its first loss of the season. The only other loss was to Mark Sanchez and the USC Trojans in the Rose Bowl. Penn State was actually up 23-14, end of the third quarter. The late Tyler Sash, had the interception with 3:46 remaining. A drive then was sustained by a controversial pass interference call against Penn State. Daniel Murray, then 31 yards out, hits the field goal with 1 second remaining. The next year, early in the year, Beaver Stadium, Penn State has tons of talent back, including Darryl Clark, the quarterback, Big Ten Player of the Year. Iowa wins it 21-10, a rainy, cool September night.
Yep.
Penn State gets the 79-yard touchdown early from Clark to Chaz Powell. First offensive play for Penn State. Nittany Lions up 10-0, end of the first quarter. People are thinking, all right, they've got this in the bag. Joe Paterno team's not going to necessarily be a blowout, but they've got this taken care of. Iowa scores 21 unanswered points. They get a safety early, and then in the fourth quarter, they take the lead on a blocked punt, returned for a touchdown by the guy who blocked the punt, Adrian Claiborne, and the Hawkeye fans went wild in that corner of the stadium, up there in the northeast corner of the stadium. Still remember, they're cheering long after the game into the night, sitting in the press box there. And at that time, I was a Penn State student, and I was absolutely stunned.
Well, one of my buddies tweeted that his biggest concern, Chuck Sponseller, is that his biggest concern, what you guys already laid out, is that it's at Kinnick Stadium. That's his biggest concern. That's how much Kinnick After Dark, it just has that, it has that effect. And getting back to that 2008 game, Chuck as well probably is one of the guys, is that I know a remote went flying across my living room after that field goal went through the uprights. Once again, it's just a tough place to play.
All right, well, it won't be Ricky Stanzi at quarterback this year for the Hawkeyes. It'll be Nate
I don't think
Stanley.
It'll be a 6-4 game either.
Yeah, I don't think so.
If someone can hold Penn State to 6 or 4 points, whatever side of that ugly matchup you want to come out on this time, I'd be very, very impressed with that defense. But Nate Stanley, 10 touchdown passes. Best three-game stretch for an Iowa quarterback since 1987. He has not thrown a pick since his third pass of the season. He's got weapons on offense. Akram Wadley is a terrific running back. Looks like he'll be relatively healthy for this game. Noah Fant, the tight end. Nick Easley has been their best receiver so far. And obviously that big traditional Iowa strong offensive line. You know the Hawkeyes are traditionally a good defensive team as well. I don't know if this is a flashy team, but as Jason mentioned, this is a Kirk Ferentz team.
Yeah, consistent team, and with Stanley, he spreads the ball around. Guys you talked about there with Easley and Wadley Fant, also Vandenberg, the senior.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with Hawkinson, the freshman. I think he's another guy that catches passes. Smith Marset came out of nowhere. This guy was barely on a depth chart to start the season. He's had a good year. He's had 2 touchdowns. So I think, really, it's a team that it's consistent. He spreads the ball around, and offensively, they don't do anything that Iowa doesn't normally do, but so do a lot of other teams, and they're tough to stop. I think Iowa's that exact thing. You know, Stanley's been consistent. He's taken care of the ball, 10 touchdowns to 1 interception, and he's going to have to do that to win the game on Saturday night, but that consistency, again, is what you look for at a team.
Matt, this reminds me, and just kind of previewing it, looking at what Iowa brings to the table, it reminds me of when they came here last year and Penn State blew them out. Penn State just absolutely controlled that game from start to finish. You're thinking Iowa's got some good players. They can run the ball. They can play that time of possession style offense. And that's maybe something that's given Penn State trouble this year because they haven't been able to get off the field. But then when you really take a step back and look at it compared to Penn State, Penn State's the better team.
Oh, absolutely. I think they look quite a bit like the same team that they played the last time, Iowa. They may have some different guys in there, but it's the same type of makeup. It's mm-hmm. the same, and you're going to get that year in and year out with Iowa. But, yeah, Penn State's a much better team than they were last year. But, once again, Stanley is a guy as a sophomore, though, who don't forget that he's played in a big game already in his career. And that Iowa State game is, for Iowa, that's a big game. It's pressure-filled. Now, I'm not saying Iowa State's anywhere to the level of Penn State, but it's a game that has a lot riding on it for him. It's a rivalry game. Once again, Penn State is not the same team. But I think the biggest matchup...
Hold on. Before you go to something else, I wasn't going to cut you off, but I'm cutting you off. That's not a big game. This is a night game, Big Ten Conference, ABC primetime. Yeah. I disagree with
it's,
you on that.
I see his point, but I agree it's not a big game. And it's a rivalry game. From that perspective, it's a rivalry game. Iowa State, they circle on their schedule every year. That's from great. That perspective...
It's but he's played in a close game already,
he
so he has
yes.
that going
and
for
on the
him.
Road,
I'm not,
but
I didn't say this guy.
Saturday,
I didn't say this guy was Sam Darnold. I just said this was a plus for him. Jeez,
Matt's looking at my face. That's why he's reacting that way. The eyes have already gone to the back of my head three different times in the eye roll.
But what you saw in that Iowa State game, and I think what you could see on Saturday, yeah, Penn State is a much better team. They gave up a lot of big plays, especially mm-hmm. through the air. Mm-hmm. In that game against Iowa State. I think the big chance that happens again Saturday.
And I see that as an area Penn State can exploit. North Texas, 14 points on 242 yards. That's 8.6 yards per play. Yeah. In what ends up being a somewhat similar offense stylistically to Penn State in the first half. And if North Texas can do that, the number four team in the country very well darn could do that and about 10 times that against the Hawkeyes. Well,
and I was about to add that... Saquon Barkley, how dangerous he is out of the backfield. That's one thing Penn State, though, has to keep an eye on is Wadley mm-hmm. out of the backfield as well. The highest yards per route run in FBS this season. Saquon is number one at 5.02 yards. Akram Wadley is number two at 4.61. And I think Wadley was a 1,000-yard. I mean, largely they give the ball to him a lot, mm-hmm. but he was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, so that's the guy that Penn State really has to key on. And who knows how healthy he really is.
Yeah, Wadley missed the second half of their 31-14 win last week against North Texas, a right ankle sprain. Iowa without their backup running back, James Butler, he's going to be out.
Another 1,000-yard rusher twice.
Heck of a player. Yeah.
But they've really been impressed with their redshirt freshman, Torin Young, and their freshman, Ivory Kelly-Martin. They combined for 155 yards and two TDs against North Texas as well. We talk about 1,000-yard. This is a team that can really run the ball, though. If you look a little further deeper into their statistics, they're only at 3.8 yards per carry, though, this season.
It's volume. It's not necessarily quality, it's volume.
So I think if Penn State can maybe get one of those plays where you slow them down, get them into a second or third and long, you like that matchup more, pin your ears back, come after Stanley. It's not that they're going to gash you for 6, 7, 8 every play. Their running game is more of, all right, we're going to get some push, get 3, get 4, get 5. And I think you lose track of – I'm more worried about yards per play – and average carry than total yards for an Iowa team.
And they're not a team that really thrives off, as you said, off big yards per play. Now,
but they've been better this year.
They've been better. Easily as a 45-yard touchdown. Wadley as a 68-yard, more so after the catch on that one. But they are a team that they've been better. But when they fall down 21-0, they're one of those teams that's in a world of trouble because mm-hmm. it just doesn't play to their style. Does any team want to fall down? No. But when a team plays the style of like Iowa plays, I don't think you want to fall down early.
And that's one of the areas I want to bring up as keys to this game. As we kind of go into keys and matchups, Iowa's trailed in every single game this year. That's fine against Iowa State. That's fine against North Texas. That's fine in your non-conference slate. You do that against the number four team in the country, especially the way Penn State has started, I think the game's over. So number one, if Iowa gets off to another slow start, Penn State started fast. That's the first matchup I'm looking for. Number two, Iowa, I think their best defense against Penn State's offense is their ability to hold the ball on offense. Kind of do something similar to Pitt did, just sustain the long drives with that running
game. That's going to be a lot of teams against Penn State this year as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Iowa, that's their best defense against Penn State. That's not taking anything away from Josie Jewell and who they have defensively. I think that's how they stop them. And then Iowa has to eliminate the big plays. So Penn State's big play potential is unbelievable. I don't know how you stop it. And if Iowa can eliminate the big plays, they have a chance. And Penn State has to watch that Iowa doesn't get any big plays. Fant can be a real difference maker. Easily can be a difference maker. And what you said, Wadley out of the backfield can be a real difference maker for them. If Penn State hits one or two home runs and Iowa doesn't, Iowa has absolutely no shot to beat the Nittany Lions, especially if field position continues to be trending in such a way that it has for Penn State all season.
I know it always goes year to year in terms of playing a team, and they say it's not in their minds about last year. If they fall down early in this game, 14-0, 21-0, there is going to be a sense of deja vu. There's going to be a sense of here we go again. So I think the start, as you put it, is the most critical part. And if Iowa starts strong, then they have a good chance they hang around in this game. Penn State starts strong, takes the crowd out of it, crushes the psyche of the Hawkeyes. Mm-hmm. I think that is really going to be the difference maker in the game. I think the start is the most critical to me.
Jason has me picturing that sad Hawkeye girl from BTN yes. in 2012 right now.
Well, that's exactly what Penn State wants to happen. I agree with everything you guys said, but I think something that needs to be looked at is the biggest game McSorley's played this year. He got a little amped up in that first half. I think you want him to just settle in right away. You're on the road, under the lights. Not that he hasn't shown before that he can't do that, but I think when you have a guy like Joshua Jackson, corner for Iowa, a 45.6 passer rating when the ball is thrown his way, if McSorley starts sailing passes or tries to force him, that can be a little bit dangerous. It's not the time of possession thing isn't a worry for me when you're scoring on those possessions, but if he gets a little shaky, throws one up there, Josie Jewell hasn't been as good this year, but he is an NFL talent, so that's one thing I think you have to watch for.
You mentioned it, though. McSorley on the road, night game, James Franklin. We've never seen this staff, this unit, on the road win a primetime game. Is that something they need yet? Do they need to prove that yet, Jason?
I don't think so because of the Big Ten championship game. They don't play in that game, yes. But now that you've played in that atmosphere, you fell down to Wisconsin 14-0. That was a game. Granted, there were a lot of Penn State fans there. I'd argue more so Penn State. But I think that game,
I think it was about 64.
Yeah.
But those Wisconsin fans were present, too.
Exactly.
They were loud.
The neutral site and also playing in the Rose Bowl, potentially basically a home game for USC. I think that the two there, they don't play those games, I'd be more concerned. I think playing those games helps the experience factor going into this.
So, Matt, you're not concerned either about going on the road at night. We have not seen that from this group yet. We have not seen them win a Big Ten game of high significance. And granted, this is early against an Iowa team that's not at the top of the polls. Ohio State's coming up later in the season. Do you need to see something from this group?
It's not a big concern, but naturally you want to see that because that shows that you are taking that step.
I think that's one of the biggest things I could get out of this game. I expect Penn State to go on the road and win in Iowa City. But if Penn State goes on the road and dominates in Iowa City, I think that discussion we had about true Big Ten favorites, we can propel that discussion even further and carry that down the line. This may be, and granted, Indiana's a good football team. Northwestern, I still believe in the Wildcats, and going there on the road is going to be tough at 11 a.m. Central Time. But I think
I might not even be up yet.
Well, you'll take it easy on that Friday night. I think this may be their biggest test before the bye.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is, too. I agree completely. Northwestern, it is that shaky start, 11 a.m., noon road game, noon our time road game. But, yeah, I think this game is without a doubt the biggest test, just based on Iowa's going to be amped and ready for this game. Anybody is going to be when you play a top-five team. But I think more so Iowa. You look at last year – They may take Saquon Barkley's Iowa kind of quit comments and stretch him a little further, too. You never know. To me, that's not an issue. But, hey, anybody's going to look for anything, and that's what Iowa's going to do in this game. So I think it is, without a doubt, Penn State's biggest test going into the bye.
All right, between the Lions at BTW underscore PSU on Twitter. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please rate our podcast as well. Our thanks to Frank Bodani from the York Daily Record for joining us on the podcast. If you missed that, that was around the midway point, probably a little bit before the midway point of our show here today. Matt, we have our picks. Do you have an updated record? And then what games we have to select this week?
Once again, some guy, by the name of Matt Bortner is out in the lead again.
He needs those ice packs.
Yeah, I did tie with Jason.
He needs to be tested for performance enhancers, if you ask me.
But Brian goes 6-3, Jason and I go 7-2.
We had to increase the size of this studio for him to fit in this door.
That door is already wide.
His head has gotten so wide.
You just see the door to get in the front here at Forever Media.
Yeah, keep carving out that frame. But I lead the way at 20-6 on the season. Jason 19-7, and Brian 16-10. This week, College Game Day heads to New York City. But I think
closest it'll ever get to Rutgers.
That's probably true. They've got a ways to go. But I still think there are some quality football games this week. First, we'll start with NC State at Florida State, which DeAndre Francois out. NC State, they've got some talent. James Blackman comes in, the freshman quarterback. He's highly touted as well. But his first game is going to be an ACC play. I go with NC State pulling this one out on the road.
You know what? I picked NC State week one thinking this was going to be a very special season for the Wolfpack. They failed me just out of bitterness. I'm going with Florida State in this game. I do like Florida State at home, too. I think the crowd behind them, they don't lose a lot often at Doak Campbell or Bobby Bowden Field, whatever it's called nowadays. But I think, ultimately, I like Florida State at home.
That sounds like every NC State season.
That's true.
Yeah,
it really does. I'll take Florida State as well.
Central Florida goes to Maryland. Maryland undefeated heading into Big Ten play. Did any of us think, well, they would be undefeated going into Big Ten play if they defeat Central Florida, but to this point, unbeaten.
Sneaky good game.
I think it is a very sneaky good game, too. I actually like Maryland at home in this one. They've surprised me a lot. I think the coaching has been there. They've done a great job with this team. I like Maryland in the upset, I think.
I think Maryland, young quarterback, playing at home. Good coaching staff. I really like what they've been able to assemble there. I think they have a lot of playmakers. I think this is a game that probably becomes a bit of a shootout, as you may expect. Give me Maryland, game that finishes somewhere in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, I think Maryland goes into Big Ten play undefeated. And don't forget, that's where Penn State ends this season, is at Maryland. Number one, Bama. They head to Vanderbilt. The Commodores, fresh off an upset of Kansas State. They implored Bama, you're next. I don't think so. Bama kills Vanderbilt.
I think Vanderbilt may start strong in this game. Being at home, I think they'll be fired up. But in the end, I think Alabama wins this game and wins it convincingly.
Guys, is there any team other than Alabama from the SEC that is in the national championship picture?
Not right now. I honestly
Georgia might be able to sneak into that conversation, but I feel like we say that every year, and then Bama.
Let's think about this. Every other conference, you can identify two, three, even the Big Ten, four teams that legitimately feel like, you know what, I see that team in the college football playoff, and it wouldn't surprise you. SEC right now? There's only one team, and that's Alabama.
I agree.
I thought LSU would be a dark horse, personally.
So did I, Jason.
They obviously got blown out on Saturday.
And Tennessee and Florida stink. They're not good offensively.
They both stink. You're correct on that one.
So I'm going to take
you don't have a safety back there and a Hail Mary with no time on the clock, I don't know. But, you're right.
So I think Alabama wins this. But that's something to watch as the year goes on. How good really is the SEC this year?
Very good point.
And I think that's been a bit of a point the last couple of years. USC, number five, goes to Cal. USC, they were on the ropes with Texas, double overtime game. Brian, I think, was the one that said he expect Texas to come to play. They did. I think USC is still my favorite to win the Pac-12. Stanford's, they've disappointed. Darnold, he's looked shaky, but he still threw for 397 yards and three touchdowns, threw two picks against Texas. USC's still way too talented, even for an undefeated Cal team.
Yeah, I think Stanford's actually the fourth-best team right now in the Pac-12. I would put Washington, too, obviously, with Browning, what they can do offensively. And then Oregon. You've got probably one of the top five running backs in the country and Royce Freeman there. I'd put Oregon three. So USC will get some challenges as the year goes on. It's not coming this week, though. They're absolutely going to roll.
Nah, and they have something to prove. You know, they really haven't looked – 2 or 3 weeks, really, they haven't looked good. I thought the Western Michigan game didn't look good, really, in that game. And Texas, granted, it's different players in a much different era. I thought that national championship game in 2006 would still be on everybody's mind in USC going into that game. And I really anticipated USC to come out smoking. I give Darnold credit. I think under pressure he plays as good as anybody at the quarterback position right now. But – I like USC, but because they have something really to prove.
TCU, number 16, heads to Oklahoma State. Maybe that or Mississippi State and Georgia, maybe the sexiest game of the week. But Oklahoma State throttled Pitt. Pitt was imploring their students to stay with free beverages if they stayed throughout the whole game.
Was it a soda?
It just said beverage.
Yeah, college students probably not staying for a soda. No.
Yeah, if it was of the other variety, I probably would have stuck around, but that's just me. But the Cowboys, they look pretty good. I think they're going to give the Sooners a run for their money, so I think Oklahoma State wins this one.
Yeah, I think they're really good, Oklahoma State. They've got a lot of playmakers. They've got a great coach. I'm still not sure how Mason Rudolph translates to the NFL game. But for a college game, he's fantastic.
Yeah,
he's a little Bryce Petty-esque.
Kind of stole my thunder with that. Absolutely. I think when you look at everybody's talking about Rosen, everybody's talking about Darnold, everybody's talking about Allen. Not a lot of people are talking about Rudolph. I don't know what he would do in the NFL. I was thinking the exact same thing. But college, I think he's a great quarterback. And Oklahoma State, to me, is a dark horse national championship contender.
Bedlam will be fun this year.
I like OK State.
Yeah, I don't know that Oklahoma State has Michael Crabtree on the outside, but this team kind of reminds me of that Graham Harrell,
Texas Tech team.
Number 8, Michigan. They go to West Lafayette. Purdue, 2-1. Fresh off a game that I picked 35-3.
Thank
Purdue.
Thank you, Missouri. I didn't pick that.
Beats Missouri. Michigan has putzed around with every team they played so far this season. Florida, okay, they're a good defense. Michigan's offense has not showed me anything this year. If Purdue gets out to a quick start and do not turn the ball over, they can win this game. I think they do. Purdue beating Michigan. Upset.
All right. He is taking crazy pills. Michigan has – Purdue has overachieved. It's still the same talent from last year. Jeff Brohm deserves a ton of credit. Hold on.
He might win Big Ten of the year.
He's right now is the favorite for Big Ten Coach of the Year, along with DJ Durkin from Maryland and James Franklin from Penn State, if Penn State continues to trend in this direction. But hold on. Let me finish, okay? Purdue, they still have the same talent they had last year. Michigan just has so much more – talent. Purdue, they say it's going to be a sellout. That's great for them. It's great for the Big Ten. You want Purdue and Indiana, the bottom feeders traditionally here, to be relevant. That's all fine and dandy. This is a real test now for the Boilermakers, and they are just going to get blown out. As fun of a story as they've been, as much more enticing to the eyes as they are to watch. Yeah, they kept it close with Louisville. Louisville plays that spread ACC style. Who destroyed Louisville? A team with a big physical presence up front, offensively and defensively, in Clemson. Guess who's going to do the same thing? That's going to be Michigan. Michigan's going to do that to Purdue, put them back in their place. And Matt, you just took a loss to try to let us catch up in those standings.
So many times people pull the Mark McGwire and they do that. I'm not here to talk about the past, but they do anyway. And I think that's it's so many times when you look at teams that go into a big game. Oh, last week they look great. Oh, the week before they look great. Purdue's coming down to earth in this game. They're coming much more back down to earth. Jim Harbaugh in his era, anywhere, not just Michigan, San Francisco and Stanford, anywhere, by week three, by week four, he has developed a lot of confidence in his team. I think this Michigan team just goes out. They have a lot to prove. Purdue, I think, has very much overachieved. I also like Michigan big in this game.
And I think last week's game between Michigan and Air Force proved why James Franklin doesn't schedule and doesn't like, and he mentioned this year, doesn't like to schedule teams that run kind of a gimmicky offense that you only see once a year.
Once a year. That's
you
the biggest
spend
point.
So much time on it. And Michigan just wastes an entire week preparing for something they won't ever see again. And you know what? It's tough because you don't spend time on it before the season. You don't spend time on that in September, most parts of don't spend time on that in August, I should say. You don't spend time on that in April. It's a waste of time. That's why you don't schedule that team, and that is why Air Force gave Michigan trouble. So that's why James Franklin, what he said about the schedule, I completely agree with him on that 100%.
The only thing I have to add, though, is once again, the offense looked terrible.
It won't against Purdue.
Number 17, Mississippi State heads to Georgia.
In fact, Michigan's defense will outscore Purdue.
All right. That's a bold statement. Mississippi State at Georgia. Me saying a bold statement when I picked Purdue to beat Michigan.
Seriously.
But Jake Fromm has done a nice job filling in at quarterback. I don't think Mississippi State can pull off an upset 2 weeks in a row. The difference, it being at Georgia, and Georgia might have the best 1-2 running back punch in the country with Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb.
I'll take Georgia.
Yeah, I think at home I take Georgia. Mississippi State has an emotional high right now, as you said. I think a lot of times that can be more worse than good, if that makes sense. I think when you look at what Georgia's able to do at home, I like the Bulldogs.
And our last pick before we get to Penn State's 7:30 showdown at Iowa. Notre Dame heads to Michigan State. The end of the Notre Dame and Michigan State matchup until 2026. But I think another end is near, and that is Brian Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame. But I think the Irish cool off the naysayers just for a little bit. They beat Michigan State. The difference is Brandon Wimbush's legs.
Is that Michigan State? I'll take Michigan State.
I don't know if I could. I feel like I was thinking the same exact thing Matt was thinking. I think Brian Kelly's tenure is going to be very short-lived very soon. But this week, I think they showed me enough in that second half against Boston College. I think Wimbush is starting to mature a little bit more. I do like Notre Dame in this spot.
Well, now the big showdown in Iowa City. I think we've all sort of tipped our cap that we think Penn State just has too much talent. I'm in that boat as well. I have the score as 31-16 Penn State. Something that Evan Staub brought up on Twitter was, do you think Penn State has saved some of its playbook for conference play? It seems like they haven't thrown deep much, especially against Pitt. I don't know out of necessity that they haven't thrown deep much, but I think you could see Barkley on that wheel route hit a couple deep this week.
I don't know after last year against Iowa if that's the play, but I think they've shown the playbook. It's just whatever the defense has given them, they've kind of taken, and they would have hit some big pass plays if McSorley was on against Pitt. I think that's wrong to say that they didn't show it against Pitt, because Penn State, out of the games they've played, I think the deepest shots they've taken were against Pitt. Maybe against Akron, but probably against Pitt. I think Penn State ends up, this game might be close early, but I think ultimately in the end, I think Penn State's going to continue to look really good. They've looked really good all year. I think they win this game pretty easily.
Granted, there's differences, obviously, at the quarterback position. It is going to help Iowa a little bit that they played Allen week one. Mm-hmm. I think play Josh Allen. I think that'll help, but not enough. I think Penn State just far superior to me than Iowa. The road game is going to be tough. I think Penn State is... Iowa keeps it close early, but I think ultimately Penn State pulls away in the end.
Is that it?
Yeah.
No more picks?
No more picks. I mean, I could be coming to a tumbling halt after picking Purdue for the upset of maybe the year if that happens.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, so that's Between the Lions this week at BTW_PSU. Hope you tuned in and enjoyed this week's podcast, and hopefully you can join us again next week. We're with you every Wednesday talking Penn State sports. For Jason Lord and Matt Fortner, I'm Brian Tripa. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you after the Nittany Lions and Hawkeyes to preview Penn State and Indiana, which will be a 3:30 kick on BTN when the Nittany Lions return home to close September. That is coming up as conference play gets underway this week for Penn State in the Big Ten.
This has been Between the Lions. Subscribe and get new episodes downloaded every Wednesday to your device. And follow us on Twitter at BTW_PSU. We are...